Welcome to the first episode of Table Setters, covering all things in the wide world of baseball. As always, my name is Steve, and joined by my co-host here, it's Devin. What's going on, dude?
I'm excited to be here, man. This is something we've talked about doing for a while. Just really pumped to get it started.
Yeah, man, I've been looking forward to do this, of course, to pull the curtain back. I'm sure you guys will hear about it throughout this whole show, talking about our own personal fantasy baseball experience, Devin's successes, three-time champion in the league that I share with him. So you're going to hear that blend in here. But what we want to do is a catch-all show for all things MLB and to kind of bridge the gap for a lot of fans that are kind of looking for a de facto source for baseball. And I think for me, there's some blind spots, Devin, because there's some podcasts out there that will focus on your team specifically. There's some that will focus on fantasy baseball. But I don't think there's a really, for me, and not a lot of shows that cover everything in baseball, looking to have the conversations and sometimes debates, you know?
Yeah, man, I follow so many different people and podcasts on X, on Twitter, and so many of them are like prospect driven, and they're awesome. I'll probably shout some of them out on here from time to time. They do an amazing job. There's also some out there that are kind of like us, like two buddies, but they're really just covering their hometown team, the teams they root for. So, you know, I think this is, like you said, kind of doing something a little different than some of the other ones that are super popular. And, you know, if people like it, hopefully it catches on.
So if you guys are joining us for the first time here or hearing my voice for the first time ever, or maybe you're not, you may know me as Ace Field Retro over on the Turnbuckle Tavern in the independent wrestling world, doing some ring announcing as well. But I have dabbled in the media and baseball. I was a writer for a season with Pitcher List, and my passion for baseball has always been there. It's my favorite sport for sure, covering end-to-end the league. But, you know, obviously with the podcasting world, wrestling kind of took the first and foremost. But I'm happy that I found someone equally as passionate to talk about really the ins and outs of baseball, because it's hard to find. I mean, when we looked for our league originally to develop and find friends, as you know, it's hard to find people to have really intricate conversations about baseball in the weeds like you and I do on the offline. So it makes sense to get behind a microphone and just have a conversation.
Yeah, there are baseball fans and then there are baseball fanatics. And that's what I consider myself, just a baseball nut. I could watch nine innings of baseball every night. My team, which is the Mets, I know heartbreak plenty well because of being a Mets fan. And honestly, when that game's over, I can very easily, if I have the time, turn it over to MLB Network and watch some more baseball. I can't get enough of it. I follow it all year round. And that's one cool thing about Major League Baseball right now. I do feel like it's starting to become more of a year-round sport, a la the NFL. From the time the World Series is over, you can follow the draft a little bit, spring training, free agency, trades, and then obviously once the season gets going, it gets real exciting.
So make sure if you guys want to help us on this journey here, follow us on Instagram at TableSettersPod, same name on Twitter /X. Devin and I have been sharing the responsibilities on both the social media platforms. So we'll be posting maybe some clips of the show, some questions, and some feedback, and get you guys involved. That's the main thing. I want to have conversations that people want to hear about. We're going to be on here weekly, hopefully dropping episodes on Wednesdays or Thursdays, breaking down the week that was before, and all the news that's hitting and making conversation. But you know, the social media portion of this, we're going to try our best to manage it. And I know, Devin, you're really excited about getting that X machine up and running.
Yeah, if it can behave. Had a little problem with it tonight, but hopefully we'll get it up there. I don't think I was alone. It seems like we're having some issues with logins, but we'll get that going. I think the social media part could make it fun if we get some people commenting. I mean, if you think we make a bad take, let us know. If you think you have something to say, something to add to the conversation, if you have a question or a topic you want us to cover, we're more than willing to take a look at those ideas.
Well, that being said, let's get right into the action here. Let's get to our first segment known as Meat of the Order. All right, Devin, let's jump right into the batter's box here. And there is some big news that dropped only a few hours ago at this point. We have the recent news of Blake Snell signing with the Giants. And we're left with the conversation of really the fallout of the Scott Boras dealings and maybe what they're asking for, but also how this affects on the field. We know that the NL West is absolutely stacked at this point. We know that the Giants are looking to compete. We talked about it loosely on our other, you know, commish wrap-up show, but obviously want to really touch upon it here. The big piece of Blake Snell is this is the reigning Cy Young winner, and he signed this late into the offseason. That's a big get for the Giants. And I think, you know, you and I expected this, but to see it go down, had to be humbling for Scott Boras as we see his clients not get what they're looking for. But this seemed like it was a strategic move, but it also seemed inevitable that Blake Snell was going to have a home come April.
Yeah, I'm glad he signed before opening day. Who knows? We don't know what he's been doing. I'm sure he's been working out and staying in shape, pitching as much as possible. As far as when we see him on the mound for the Giants, I don't know yet, but hopefully sooner than later. But yeah, the Scott Boras stuff, I think that's the big story. And we all know he has some big, big clients next year. And we'll see if this offseason has any kind of effect on next offseason. Some people are out there already saying that Scott Boras has lost his touch a little bit. And we'll see. We'll see if that's true. I mean, a lot of players, and I mean, a lot of front offices seem to be going younger. And it seems to be harder and harder for some of the older guys, not that Blake Snell's old, but some free agents to get the deals that they want. And it's kind of a game of chicken. Who knows what's Juan Soto's free agency, if he reaches it. I know that's up for debate. Who knows what that might bring.
So we saw an article on The Athletic today, and not to jump too far ahead, because we do want to talk about the two-year deal worth $62 million for Blake Snell and how it affects the Giants. But you mentioned the Boras stuff, and I want to jump into what's being called unrest. So I'm using a word as strong as mutiny happening in the Major League Baseball Players Association. And there's a lot of uneven feelings right now happening among those in there. And there was a very heated call just a few days ago about where the direction is. And I think a lot of the players are unhappy with really the fallout of what we're seeing this offseason, where you're looking to get paid. We watched Cody Bellinger and now looking at Blake Snell, not securing what Scott Boras had ultimately wanted them to get. And I think the market is evening out. And you use the word a game of chicken. I think that's exactly it right here. And I think similar to when we saw the labor negotiations going on, someone's going to have to blink. And right now the players are holding out strong that they don't want to lose any piece of ground that they've gained over the last couple of negotiation sessions.
Yeah, you know what? I can't help but look at next offseason and think that, yes, this is a somewhat coordinated effort by the owners in Major League Baseball, knowing who is coming to free agency very soon, and a lot of them as a Scott Boras represented player. Juan Soto is the biggest name. You got Pete Alonso as well. There's some big pitchers such as Corbin Burns, Max Fried. It's a big one next year for sure, and I think there's some ownerships that are kind of waiting. As a Mets fan, I think it's pretty damn clear that they are one of them. The Red Sox were very quiet this offseason. Fans didn't like it. Maybe they're another one of them. So it hasn't been like this year after year recently as far as owners not willing to spend money. There have been years like this, but I feel like the last couple off seasons before this, we saw a change where there was a little bit more free spending. I mean, Steve Cohen signing 40-year-old pitchers to these giant AAV deals short term, but you know, he's changed his tune, and I think others have. And it, again, I don't think it is nonsense to say that this could be, maybe we shouldn't use the word collusion, but slightly coordinated to bring the market down for some of these major, major free agents come next year.
So part of the frustration from the players is what we're talking about here, where free agency has been really a struggle from the jump. And outside of the Dodgers, you know, we can use them as an example of spending money, and that's raising the amount of money spent. There's teams that have spent $2 billion combined so far after clubs spent $3.9 billion a year ago. This is according to SpotRac. And the Dodgers included club spend is around $2.8 billion this winter, or closer to $2.5 billion when Shohei Ohtani's contract is adjusted to present all its value. So we're looking at this, and I think players are starting to see they've been waiting for their paydays. Everyone's been looking for that year that they could be a free agent. They put the numbers together. They make their case. And you know, over time, you know, we can go back to all these contracts that, you know, the Albert Pujols contract, you're kind of being paid for what you already did. And we watch them run out the clock on it, and he's still being guaranteed money. You can even go down the list with Bobby Bonilla with that negotiated contract with the Mets. But this has been a tale as old as time with baseball, where owners and teams had to kind of just suck it up in the immediate and hurt for it in the future. And it seems like you said, a coordinated effort to say, you know what? We don't have to. And I also think part of this, Devin, is the emphasis on younger players and the control and how immediately they're affecting on-field play. And I think it's a combined thing. And ultimately, yeah, you want the players to get paid, and I think that's their negotiated right. But it's a good thing that teams can compete with the younger players from the minor leagues. And it makes every other team competitive faster. I mean, look what happens with the Diamondbacks, and I mean, look at the Orioles. We'll talk about them, I'm sure, throughout this whole season here. It is a good thing for baseball, not such a good thing for the older side of free agents looking to cash a payday.
For sure. I mean, look at the Texas Rangers, your world champions. Like, Evan Carter was thrust right into the middle of that lineup last year in the playoffs and the World Series. I mean, when Adolis Garcia got hurt, I believe he was batting cleanup some nights, and he held his own more than that. He was a star. So that's just one example. There is a youth movement. Players are coming faster, which is super exciting. And that is the positive side to look at it. The negative side is like, all right, are owners kind of working together a little bit to take the market down to these players? Are the players not getting what they maybe deserve? Their fair share, right? Their slice of the pie that we know is there. It's not like there is no money. But the positive side is there's a lot of fun young players to follow, and guys are having an impact way quicker and coming to the major leagues quicker than I can ever remember. And to me, that's a great part of what's happening in Major League Baseball.
And with free agency, there was always going to be an adjustment. We watched the Ohtani deal happen, and everyone kind of had a collective gulp of saying, where is this going? But there had to be an adjustment somewhere down the line, because we watched it get insane year after year, and you can name the contract you want and adjust it relatively to the year it's in. But I think the foregone conclusion for a lot of these franchises where they were going to have to accept that the last 4 or 5 years of a deal, they're going to have pretty much dead weight on their roster. And I think teams are saying that's enough at this point. And especially with the leverage of, we can compete with a player at a league minimum. And sometimes you look at their adjusted WAR for them, it's a better option anyway. So why are we spending the money for a veteran player that eventually is going to hurt you financially? So this is going to be interesting to follow down the line. We know that there's a lot of stubborn voices in that room on both sides. And at the end of the day, this is going to be an issue that crops up again, because players want their fair share of the pie. And a lot of money comes in with these TV negotiated deals. And I'm sure that's going to change over time too. We'll talk about Bally Sports and them going bankrupt, and also how streaming affects all of this as well, because a lot of the money that is infused in a lot of these franchises has to do with the money that comes in for the negotiated media rights. So what does that look like as far as that in the future? But that's a conversation for another time. But this is fascinating, Devin. I mean, we looked at the 2-year deal worth $62 million. Snell has the option to opt out after the upcoming season, make it effectively a $30 million player option for 2025. It also includes a $17 million signing bonus deferred until January 2026. And at this point, Snell got a substantial payout. He did wait, probably wasn't the exact amount of money he was looking for, or at least Scott Boras was looking for. But fresh off winning the NL Cy Young Award, he's going to be joining Logan Webb at the top of the Giants pitching rotation. And they're going to be a pretty formidable duo coming in. Maybe they're not the best 1-2 punch, but they're pretty damn close.
Yeah, I mean, here's what I'll say. I'm glad to see that the NL West did not just roll over and die this year when the Dodgers did what the Dodgers did, as far as Tyler Glasnow, Shohei Ohtani, Yamamoto, on and on. Teoscar Hernandez goes there, like on and on and on. And they just have, you know, so many good prospects still yet to come if they need them, or if they need to move them for other things. You saw the Padres trade for Dylan Cease, which is a little confusing based on who they let go, like a Blake Snell and obviously Juan Soto. But I guess this was the more the better cost option for them. The Giants now. Giants made several moves. They tried the last couple years, and they missed out. They missed out Carlos Correa stuff, obviously the Aaron Judge stuff.
We haven't seen Aaron Judge debut yet. I've been waiting.
No, I don't know where he is, but yeah, so for them to finally make a bunch of moves, shoring up the defense with Matt Chapman there, obviously, like you said, a kind of a two-headed monster if they pitch to their potential in Blake Snell and Logan Webb. The Dodgers are the favorites. They should win that division, but these guys are going to give them a little bit of a hard time. And you got the Diamondbacks, who made it to the World Series. We know how scrappy that team is. Added Eduardo Rodriguez, so and obviously Eugenio Suarez as well, which all we've heard is he's a great clubhouse guy. So, I mean, I haven't mentioned the Colorado Rockies. Sorry to Chris Bryant and Nolan Jones and that crew. Probably going to be another rough year there. But other than that, the NL West, good for those teams trying to stay in it and compete with the monster that is the Los Angeles Dodgers.
You don't think the Colorado Rockies are going to compete on the power of vibes and friendship?
I don't know if there are any vibes there.
So the big barometer of the Giants really going all in is looking at how close they are to the luxury tax territory for the first time since 2017. They believe they can win. And I understand going against the three-headed dragon that is this monster of the Los Angeles Dodgers, it's admirable that they're going out here. You mentioned some of the free agent signings, but, you know, Matt Chapman, Jorge Soler, this is a team that's going to be competitive. And we know once you get into the bright lights of October, all it takes is a short burst and some momentum. That doesn't matter how many wins you have. You have to make it there. And as we know, the expanded playoffs, and we've seen teams lesser than the Giants get there to the, you know, and then you add in the history of the Giants and the Dodgers, where they feel like in any given Sunday type of approach, where you pop those uniforms on, they're always going to have a competitive game with their rivalry and all that. So I like what they've done here. The signing comes with the cost of the draft picks on the Giants' part and international bonus pool space, which let's not discount that. That's a big piece to how teams are being built nowadays. But the Giants view this as a worthwhile investment because they're trying to compete this year. And that's all you can ask for. As we watch year after year, teams punt and kind of wait for the future, you could at least say the Giants are trying to win now. And I think you could look at everybody else in the NLS and just kind of shy off and say, it's expected. We're going to invest in 2024. But how could we compete with the Dodgers? At least the Giants are going toe-to-toe with them, you know? And I just appreciate it on their end.
Now, with all that being said, speaking of the Dodgers and one of their NL West foes, the Padres, the Korea Series starts tomorrow, kind of the first opening day. I mean, I think most of us are considering March 28th a true opening day as far as across the league. But do you have any expectations for these games between the Dodgers and the Padres? I mean, the last few years, the Dodgers have tortured them, even when the Padres were making all those big moves and bringing in all those superstars. It goes all the way back to when the Padres thought they were trading for Max Scherzer, and the next thing you know, Max Scherzer and Trey Turner, they're wearing Dodger uniforms. So what do you think? These games, I know it's early. It's like a week earlier than everyone else. What are we thinking we're going to see between those two teams starting tomorrow?
Well, first, the impact of it outside of the fact that it's awesome to see baseball that counts being back. I've enjoyed spring training, but it's going to be nice to see some numbers in the wins or loss column for both of these teams. It's the first time they're in South Korea, and this is a big honor to get. It's not just two slub teams. To have the Dodgers there with the star power of Shohei Ohtani making his debut in a Dodger uniform in this international setting, it's making history for them. So, you know, the GoCheck Sky Dome is going to be the home of this. It's going to be 6:05 Eastern AM. So if you're up with the kids or whatever, it's tune in and check it out. I personally will be checking it out probably the sixth inning or so when I'm getting ready for work. But either way, I mean, this is a reflection outside of just the games. And we could sit here and break down the pitching matchup and what we expect. I expect two low scoring games myself. But the decision for them to host games in South Korea, it reflects MLB's approach to what they want. It's international expansion, and they're trying to build the game and the fan base. And we know that a big piece here is the stars like Shohei Ohtani. And let's not forget Ha Sung Kim, where he is a big star here, making long-term connections with the local fan base and promoting baseball growth in the region. You know that it's eventually going to bear some fruit. These games, like throughout all sports, you kind of have lifelong fans because of the experience of how close they are with these international stars. And at the same time, I'm not saying that the MLB is looking to expand, you know, for a team somewhere internationally, but let's not discount how important it is for the game to grow out there, because that also helps younger kids play baseball. It includes keeping the game going strong. And then we want to have TV rights out there as well. So this is a big thing for MLB using this venture to, you know, future endeavors with other countries, including South Korea.
Yeah, I mean, you said it right. This is one thing that the execs, Rob Manfred, you know, who we're not always going to be super positive about, and even maybe a little later in this show, but they get this one right. Bringing it all around the world, it's the right thing to do. We've seen how well that has worked for the NBA, right? Just being a global game. We see the World Baseball Classic and how excited these fans in different countries get for these games. It's huge. So I love what they're doing. I'm not a huge fan of like the week early tease. It's not my favorite thing, but I'll take real baseball. I'll take that. I just don't like the, you know, 5 or 6 days after that we don't have another real game. Kind of a stop and start. But as far as the game itself goes, I'll make one prediction here. The first prediction that I'll make on this show, I think Glasnow will kick off with at least 10 strikeouts tomorrow.
I can totally see that. I think, like I said before, it's going to be a low scoring game. I think there's going to be some adjustment. Of course, these players have been playing in spring training, but we know there is an adjustment over time. I would fully expect these games to be somewhat being like 4-2 or like a 5-3 type of thing. I don't think we're going to see an offensive explosion, but who knows? I would like to see. That'd be good for the fans to see Ohtani go deep multiple times. It would be awesome. Offense is what sells pretty much. We've seen that throughout the steroid era that kind of saved baseball. And I'm sure we'll mention some of our favorite memories back in the day, but offense sells. And I think as the diehards go, we love pitching, but as far as the casuals that may be in the building here, we know that some of them are diehards. They did host the World Baseball Classic, as you mentioned, here in this exact building. It's a historic occasion for them. So we're going to see a little bit of that, but I fully expect Glasnow to have a good showing here. The real question is game two with Yamamoto making his major league debut. Mm-hmm. It's a challenge for him. He struggled a little bit in the spring, but this might be the best soft launch point for him without as many eyes on what he's doing. Of course, it is. There's a lot of pressure here on an international game, but not as much as it would be on a traditional opening day with a big slate of games, and kind of see the little scroll at the bottom of, you know, Yamamoto went 2 1/3 and gave up 7. You know, that's kind of the stuff we've been seeing in spring training.
Yeah, I mean, so many pitchers, big name pitchers, you look at what they've done in spring training, and there's a bunch of guys that have gotten lit up numerous times. And I think that's pretty normal. So many of these guys work on new things, might try to include a little new wrinkle, new pitch. And by the end of spring training, if it hasn't worked, you know, they go back to what works for them. And I think you'll see that opening day when some opening day starters go out there and they look more like themselves. And you're like, oh, what was that spring training stuff about? These guys are testing things out, like more so than the hitters. The pitchers are testing a lot of things out. For me, what stood out with Yamamoto, the games themselves, the lines, not much. That first time he was out throwing to guys like Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman and seeing their reaction, that's what sticks out to me. So I think he's going to impress as well. I think that Glasnow, Yamamoto, 1-2 punch, I mean, that could be a lot of strikeouts, a lot of Ks.
So we're talking about the Dodgers here, obviously, and we're not going to see them go through the full line here because it's an abbreviated 2-start series. But the Dodgers did name Gavin Stone as their 5th starter. Dave Roberts confirmed that earlier last week. And, you know, at this point, the rotation has seen significant changes due to health concerns. Glasnow, Yamamoto, Bobby Miller, James Paxton, all locked in for the spots. But they've been trying to figure out what's happening with that 5th spot for a while. Notably, we had Walker Buehler return from Tommy John surgery. It's been managed very cautiously. They want to be careful with him. He has been, I mean, before the additions of Yamamoto and Glasnow, that was your guy. That was the ace. But he's going to have some workload restrictions. Then again, we're going to talk about a soft launch point for getting someone back ready for a season. Who has a softer launch point than Walker Buehler? You could probably wait until July to bring him back and they'd be fine. But Gavin Stone here, and I know the 5th spot is not as much conversation. All fans of different teams talk about the 5th start. It's always debated who should have that. Yankees and the Mets have been having the same conversation. But this is significant because we saw Gavin Stone emerge of, you know, over Ryan Yarbrough, Michael Grove, and he looked pretty good here. I mean, 0.93 ERA in spring training. So if he works out to be a solid 5th starter, the rich get richer, Devin. Like, what? Like, the Dodgers don't even need this. And his impressive strikeout rates and solid ground ball numbers really blew the front office away. And it was kind of a no-brainer at this point.
Yeah, it's just crazy, man. Just ridiculous. They have another guy in the fold. And I believe he's one guy. I look at his numbers and I believe what he did in spring. I'm not saying he'll be quite as dominant once the lights are on, but to get another guy like that, and then you kind of mentioned it, it's unbelievable if you look at the pitchers they don't have yet that are on the roster, like a Walker Buehler, like a Clayton Kershaw, that I don't even know if anyone's thought about him in a few months.
Let's not forget Dustin May.
Yeah, like we can go on and on. Like Julio Urias is gone. I don't know what Julio Urias is doing. I know there's outside factors there. But like, just think about the guys they've lost, the guys they've let go, and the guys they still have and they brought in. It's incredible. Traded Michael Busch over to the Cubs. Who, Michael Busch, if you don't know him, like look at what he did in AAA. He absolutely tore the cover off the ball. And they just let him go. And they got a couple nice prospects back. It's just unbelievable. And just deep, fun players to watch, to be an LA Dodger fan. The only thing is missing is a 162-game season World Series, and that's a pretty big thing that's missing. And don't tell me Shohei Ohtani is going to bring it, because he played with Mike Trout and finished fourth place almost every year. So that's another debate we can have, what effect he'll have. He'll put up his stats, and I think he'll make Mookie Betts and Freddie Freeman even better. Freddie Freeman, I've mentioned it to you. on the side. He's my runaway front runner for MVP, hitting behind those two other guys we mentioned, Mookie Betts and Shohei Ohtani, if that's what the lineup they actually go with night to night. But yeah, the LA Dodgers, man, it's World Series or bust. There's going to be a lot of talking heads going after them if they do not deliver. I know it's only year one of these guys, but that's the expectation, and I think that's fair, to be honest.
So at the risk of being disrespectful to the defending champs, we're going to hop one of our notes here as the natural transition is to talk about really what it is right now, the Los Angeles Dodgers or anybody else. You mentioned World Series or bust, but they're gearing up for what promises to be a 2024 season that either way is going to be memorable. They spent a remarkable $1 billion this offseason. Stars like Mookie Betts, Shohei Ohtani, Freddie Freeman, they're leading the charge, and expectations are absolutely high. And this feels like territory where I think you mentioned the other day to me, it's not even about winning the World Series. It's about dominating the competition where you can't squeak by. I think there'll be criticism of them if there's any flaws in the team. And for them, looking at 2020 and their trophy case, they have that World Series trophy. This is a case of they need to do it this year, especially with the investment on their side and what they put into this team. And they've become the new evil empire. So enjoying that sort of the arrow on their chest or looking at what is being targeted for them, there's a lot that comes with that. And there's a lot of pressure. And a lot of these players are facing the slings and arrows of the criticism of not only your own fan base, the opposing fan base, but the media. There's a laser hot focus on this team, the day to day. There's no minutia of the 162. Every single thing they do on the field, good or bad, is going to be under a microscope. And that gets exhausting. So I think this is going to be outside of the on the field expectations. There's a lot of stuff that's going to be off the field that affects the LA Dodgers, and good, better, and different. This is what you want. This is the expectations you want. And they're the hottest thing in LA right now. We know that they're going to be, the jerseys going to be flying off the shelves, but conversation becomes tough, and LA sports radio is going to be all over them if they're not competitive from the jump. And if they get off to a slow start, man, it can be brutal to them.
No doubt about it. I just think they have the right personalities. When you see a guy like Mookie Betts, like just confidence, laid back. Everyone seems to love him. Opposing teams, teammates, Freddie Freeman, same thing. Been there, done that. I know Atlanta's not the same under the microscope media, but it's not like a small city. And he played on really, really good teams with high expectations over and over. Shohei, too. He was on a team that had high expectations and was not successful. I don't know if there was as much attention there. I'm sure not, but it never seemed to really get under his skin when people would criticize, their underperformance. But here's the thing. Pardon the interruption. PTI, one of my favorite shows of all time. Back in Tiger Woods' dominant era, when he was just winning everything, they would always, before every big tournament, Michael Wilbon, Tony Kornheiser would do a segment of Tiger Woods or the field. And it's crazy to say, but they often pick Tiger Woods. You would think the odds are like one of the other 50 guys that are playing, right? But if you pose that question to me in baseball, all right, the LA Dodgers or the fields, I'm not even hesitating. I'm taking the fields. There's so many factors, like you said. We don't know how they will come through the season health-wise. You've already had a little hiccup with the Gavin Lux stuff, suddenly couldn't throw the ball from shortstop. And Mookie Betts, he moved to second base. Now he's moving to shortstop. So that's one thing. If I'm a Dodgers fan, I don't exactly love moving my star leadoff hitter all over the place. I know he's super willing to, and he's just an unbelievable athlete. I get that. But, like, you want to figure that out quickly, see, like, where these guys are going to play. But we have to remember there's also other really good teams like the Atlanta Braves. And once you get to the playoffs, anything can happen. Here's another thing. I don't think they've changed this yet. The whole layoff situation for these one seeds, these two seeds, in the first two seasons of this playoff format, we have seen it take a major effect on a lot of the higher seeds who have this layoff and don't play for about a week and then go ahead against the team that won, is a three-game series, right, in the first round? Mm-hmm. They go ahead and play these guys who have a little momentum and are in the groove, and some of these higher seeds have gotten ran out of the building pretty quick. I mean, you look at the Baltimore Orioles last year, who were, in my opinion, maybe the most fun team all season, with all those young guys performing and living up to expectations, somehow winning the AL East. And then all that went away quickly after that layoff, they were out in a blink of an eye. So I don't think the Dodgers are above that. I know their pitching staff is insane, but if one or two of those guys get hurt, and Tyler Glass now we know has a history of injury, I think you're looking at things a little differently, and we don't know what you're going to get out of Clayton Kershaw. Walker Buehler's coming back from a major, major injury. So it's almost hard to be negative at all about the LA Dodgers. But if you give me Dodgers or the Fields, I'm taking the Fields really quickly every day of the week.
Yeah, and the thing is, too, with baseball, as you mentioned, it's momentum-based, and there's so much that can happen. There's a world and a likely world where the Dodgers have a really good season but just don't win the World Series. And I think as we were lauding them with the expectations that are going to fall on their shoulders, you know, living in Yankee world and being a Yankee fan, it is measured on World Series or the season was a failure. There's a world where the season just was really good. Yamamoto he becomes Rookie of the Year. Tyler Glass now potentially wins Cy Young. Mookie Betts wins the MVP. And they still could lose in the second round or the first round of the playoffs. I think the expectation is they're going to win the NL West. I mean, like we mentioned before, the Giants are going to be competitive. But at this point, just the full workload of 162-game season, it's overwhelming that the Dodgers are going to get there. But with the playoff format and the way baseball functions, and you have been playing baseball your whole life, it's momentum-based. And at any time, if there's a cohesive movement that we have a couple guys slumping or there's injuries, there's a lot that can happen. Or, as we know, any team could beat any other team on any given day. You pull the full number of run the stats on 162 games, but you take the worst team in the MLB, which is still a pretty damn good assessment of players and assortment of them. They still could beat the Dodgers on any given day. We watch it happen in the regular season. We get upset when we watch our teams play the worst, and you know, you feel like a layup is going to be a 3-game sweep, and you watch your team lose 2 out of 3. How many times does that happen when you see the Mets? So there's a chance that shit happens in the playoffs because you have the time when you watch the Dodgers. Keep in mind, they're playing another playoff team that made it through the trenches of 162 games. So it's going to be challenging. I'm also taking the field as well because in a lot of ways, I love the Dodgers, but I am infatuated with what the Braves have done too. So like you mentioned them as well. I think in a perfect MLB world, you have that as your World Series. I think the other example, one of the two would be in the World Series. In the perfect world, you have either the Dodgers versus the Yankees or the Braves versus the Yankees for media rights, you know what I mean? But I don't know if I see that happening, especially looking at the way things have kind of worked out the last few years. You mentioned the Diamondbacks, who had that on their bingo card going into 2023.
Yeah, and let's not forget the Philadelphia Phillies, who more than any team have shown up under the bright lights the last two seasons. And playing in that stadium, as we've heard players say, is very difficult. I am no Philadelphia fan. I hate pretty much every sports team that plays in that city. But you got to understand the fandom that takes place there is a different breed. I mean, we're New Yorkers. I think the fandom's pretty different here. Philly might be even a little more different than that. I hate to say it. It hurts me to say a little bit. But when you hear Citizens Bank Park, when you have to play there, it's a different sound. And Bryce Harper is such an emotional leader there. They just have guys that live up to the hype when the lights are the brightest. But I know the Diamondbacks beat them. They came back from being down. So that's another team you can't discount. I think, you know, they're going to have a harder road to just get to the postseason this year with how competitive the NL West is. But you never know, man. Corbin Carroll, another guy that just seems to be calm and cool, and he's the leader of that team. So we'll see what we get from them.
And despite a losing effort, let's not forget the Diamondbacks have all the experience they gained by playing in that World Series, and they're still so young. The core of that team is still coming into their own. And, you know, I compare it to even Juan Soto. We'll talk about him later in the show, but his first World Series introduction, he was such a young kid. Yep. And that has helped cement him as really one of the best players that we're ever going to see in our generation. But let's not discount playing in those very pressure-packed games in front of passionate fan bases. That molds you as a player. We watched Jeter go through the same thing. It makes you who you are when you're faced with those circumstances at a young age.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt about it. So I think, you know, it's either they're going to build their momentum from last season, what they did, or you could see the opposite, a little bit of a hangover effect if they get off to a slow start. But before we go too far here, you kind of mentioned them in passing before. We don't want to be disrespectful by not talking about them for too long here. The Texas Rangers, they are our defending World Series champions. The offseason, in my opinion, well, there's two sides of the coin. There's still a lot of excitement with a guy like Wyatt Langford, who we're going to talk about a bit at some point. But the disappointing part is because of the TV situation, the rights, the deal, right? Money coming in. They didn't really do much in the offseason. And I think it's a shame that Jordan Montgomery has not been able to re-up with them. And who knows? There's still time. That could come to fruition. We never know. But they're going in with, I don't want to say paper-thin rotation, but it's not great. Offense should still be there, right? Maybe even better. I mean, up and down the lineup, 1-9, you have proven hitters, guys that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, some guys that can run. They can do a little bit of everything. Well, what are your thoughts on the Texas Rangers? And if you had to give them a percentage, as far as what percentage chance would you give them of repeating as champions, where would you put that percentage right now?
Wouldn't be at 0%, but I don't even like them coming out of the AL West. I'll be honest with you. I mean, they're facing, perennial contenders, the Houston Astros, which we know what they've done in the past, and good, better, and different. The Astros are the Astros. They've built in a proven pedigree at this point that they are the, no matter what, even if the Rangers won the World Series, I still feel like the class of division is the Astros. As far as them not spending, I don't think they're done. And we're going to get into our buy or sell about, you know, the two free agents that are left after the two biggest names. I think Montgomery is going to be back there. I think it's a waiting game. I think they're trying to make it work. He's seeking at least 5 years or more at $20 million. Maybe he takes a cut for that and they can make it work, especially with the fact he's going to be playing in a place he's comfortable. We watched what he did there last year, and I think it's a big piece of what he wants. I mean, you could take the money and go play somewhere that's non-competitive, or you could take a little less and play in competitive games with the limelight on, and you can continue to build on what they've established last year. I think the TV thing rings a very, very true, as you were saying before, with the money that's here. They were expected to receive somewhere between $90 to $100 million from Diamond Sports, which was the parent company of Bally Sports, for the 2024 TV rights. But that does represent a cut from their original negotiated contract. We heard everything going on. There's no current solution for 2025. So outside of the fact that Bally Sports has kind of claimed bankruptcy and all the things that went on there, there's also the change in guard about investing in media rights. We know that go back in the day with Fox Sports, with the Dodgers and the money that goes in for Yes Network, there's a lot of money being infused into the franchises through this, and they rely on that money to really field the team. So with that uneven, they were kind of in limbo about building on this team. And let's not forget, and they'll never admit this, but when a team wins the World Series, there's a grace period from their fan base where this season is house money for them. And I'm not expecting them to punt at all, but I think part of the Rangers, and this is a team with their first World Series in history, they're going to put up the banner. It's going to be celebration all year, you know, and they're going to try to win. And I think what they have is going to help them win. Look at the core they have there and the young players that are coming up that are not even fully come to fruition. I just don't think they did enough in the offseason to compete with an already established division. Everything broke right for them. How often does it break right in a season for you? It's just not going to be in the cards for this year for them.
You know, I tend to agree. I'll put it at like a 3% chance, which I think is maybe a little higher than it should be even. I mean, we know repeating in baseball is insanely difficult without all the outside factors we talked about. I don't know. I mean, I think the fans will have definitely a grace period there for sure, especially in Texas, especially when you think about those years ago with those heartbreakers, you know, the David Freese games and all those things against the Cardinals. To actually win one is big. And they did spend a lot of money the past couple seasons. You think about Corey Seager, Marcus Semien. So it's not like they haven't spent in a while. But when you're a Texas Ranger fan and you look at that lineup, you're like, hey, we're still in win now mode. Like, this lineup is incredible. It's one of the probably top five, maybe even top three lineups offensively in Major League Baseball. So I think the expectations are still high. The AL West is interesting. I don't think the Astros rotation is anything to write home about either. They do seem to figure it out more than any other team. They do seem to plug the holes. When you think about like a guy like George Springer leaving years ago, we thought that was going to be huge. A guy like Carlos Correa. So stars do leave and they do seem to figure it out. But I don't know. I still lean towards the Rangers a little more past them. I think the Seattle Mariners, to me, are the bigger threat to win the division, because I think their rotation, you can make the argument that it could be the best rotation in baseball. And then offensively, they just have to do enough. I don't think the offense is bad. I think the offense is a little inconsistent. They seem to go into some lulls. So we'll see how they do. But I think they're a threat.
Can we just also just put it out there? Bruce Bochy deserves all the flowers thrown at his feet with what he's able to do in different settings. Shout out to Bruce Bochy. And so like, it's so nice to see him start to get the recognition. I mean, what he did in San Francisco, like that was a dynasty level team where the Giants won on every even year and all the things that he built there. But also what he did with Texas, like he went in there and just unassumingly 69 years old, just brought in all the expertise and felt like he was the final piece for what they were looking for. So shout out to Bruce Bochy and everything he's brought to the table.
Definitely.
So we were originally going to be talking about some of the veteran players' milestones, and I think when we'll wait till next week when we're back here, we're previewing opening day where a lot of these guys are going to be out there. There's a lot of 2024 milestones that are going to be providing a backdrop for some of the anticipation for some of these veteran players. So, you know, hits and home runs, RBI, stolen bases, those are all things coming up. We'll preview that next week to give you guys a little bit of a tease here. But the milestones out there, it's weird to watch some of these players get older and seeing them on the field. There's been pictures of, you know, Paul Goldschmidt at 37 years old with the younger players. It's crazy because, you know, you and I are sitting here lifelong baseball fans, and we remember when a lot of these guys got called up, including Mike Trout, where, you know, Mike Trout at this point is the elder statesman in a lot of ways and sometimes forgotten about because of, you know, injuries as of late. But let's not forget Mike Trout as he continues to climb the list of the leaderboards and where he's at. He's an all-time great destined for Cooperstown.
Yeah, kind of the forgotten man. And we're going to make a little comparison here in just a minute. I'm sure it might ruffle some people's feathers and other people might be perfectly fine with it. But yeah, man, I feel for Mike Trout. Like there's a part of me that I don't think it's going to ever happen, to be honest, or at least not this year. But I'd love to see him kind of reinvigorated by playing somewhere in, I mean, I don't want to say bigger market because LA is a big market, but just on a playoff team, I guess. Let's make it simple as that. Like, don't get me wrong, I hate the Philadelphia Phillies, so I don't really want to see him there.
Gotta be Philly, dude.
That is his hometown team. Imagine him and Bryce Harper, like, in that lineup. And that's a lot of money, so they'd have to figure that out. But, like, that's always what I've thought. I've said for a while now, I think Mike Trout is going to figure out a way to end up in a Philly uniform at some point. But he also seems like such a good dude that doesn't just want to escape the situation. But if we make a cross-sport comparison, Damian Lillard was that guy in the NBA, if there's any basketball fans. He constantly said, I don't want to be that guy that joins the super team, right? And eventually it kind of wore on him, and it's not like he begged out of Portland, but he did let his agent say, all right, let's see what else is out there. And now he's playing with another superstar. The Trout stuff's interesting. He's also not playing at the level that we're used to. I mean, obviously injuries take their toll. It's been a super long time since he's been on the field for, you know, 162 games or anything even close. He strikes out a ton now, way higher than ever. But there's a part of me that thinks he must still be super motivated. He's got to hear all the noise as far as, you know, the disappointment stuff with not just the team, but I think some people are a little hard on him too about not getting back to the playoffs. Like, he is the leader of that team. He's a multiple-time MVP. And I think I heard him say recently he wants another MVP. Like, he wants another MVP season. That's good to hear. And I hope he can get it again.
Absolutely. And we'll talk more about those milestones coming up and preview what is going to be Mike Trout's season here coming up in 2024. There's high expectations despite being kind of lauded in the obscurity of Anaheim / you know, Los Angeles area over there, as they like to call it, 40 miles out of LA. But let's get into our next segment here called Take a Pitch or Swing Away. We'll introduce it to you guys. All right, Devin, so I'll let you explain this segment to everybody. And I guess you'll let you introduce. We will go back and forth. You do the first one, I do the second, introduce it, and ask each other what we think of it if we have thoughts on it.
All right, so yeah, this segment is basically kind of like a buy or sell kind of thing where we'll just make a statement and the other person will either take the pitch, which kind of means like they don't agree with it, or swing away, which is our term for, yep, we agree, we like that, we're gonna go with that. So I'll kick it off. The first topic here, we just mentioned we were going to make a Mike Trout comparison to a very, very young player. So here's the statement. Wyatt Langford, the Texas Rangers, will have the best rookie season we've seen since Mike Trout was a rookie in 2012. He did make an appearance, by the way, a few games the year before. I don't want to say like 30 games or so. But his first full season, he hit .326, 30 home runs, 83 RBIs, and 49 stolen bases. So what do you think?
I'm going to sell that. I'm taking the pitch. I would love to see that happen, but I think with the embarrassment of riches on offense for the Texas Rangers, there will not be as much reliance on him to be as featured. I think they're going to wait even. I know that he is potentially being on the opening day roster, but I would not even expect him to come close to those numbers. I would see probably less than 300 average. He can get close to 30 home runs depending on the at-bats. He's certainly not going to come close to stolen bases. RBIs, depending on situations, could be close. Mm-hmm. I'm backtracking a little bit, but I'm going to sell it because Mike Trout's season in 2012 was remarkable.
All right, so taking the pitch. I mean, I agree with you. I think, like you said, if you just straight up said, all right, take the pitch or swing away, Wyatt Langford will be rookie of the year, I think a lot of people would swing away at that. But like you said, the 49 stolen bases, the 326 average, I doubt we see that. I do think there's a world where you could see 30 home runs. If he's on the team, you got to play every day. Mm-hmm. You're not bringing a kid like that up if he's not going to play every single day. And the 83 RBIs, I do think that's attainable in that lineup too, depending on where in the lineup he's going to hit. All right, but let's go to the next one. So, all right, take a pitch or swing away. The Baltimore Orioles will repeat as American League East champions.
I'm going to take the pitch again. And I think what the Baltimore Orioles did in the offseason was admirable with the acquisition of the Brewers ace Corbin Burnes. I mean, Burnes brings experience, reliability to the young pitching staff. But really, the loss of the closer Felix Bautista to Tommy John is going to be a significant blow to their team. Mm. It was a big piece of what they did last year. The core of the young talent, I think the sophomore slump for some of these players and the addition of a full season of what they can bring to the table is going to be their strength. And their farm system continues to churn out all the prospects, and the long-term success is going to be there. But I think with the injury to Bautista, I know people probably say, is that as damaging? You probably find a closer. No, you have to look at Bautista as a closer. This guy was game-changing, and losing him really, really hurt. So I think there could be a playoff team not going to win the division, though.
Yeah, I mean, you make good points. The AL East is really tough to predict. I feel every year I try to put a little DraftKings parlay together with picking each division winner. And honestly, when you think about that, it doesn't sound that hard in your brain if you're a baseball fanatic, right? If you follow the game 162 games a year and more. But I never come close. Last year, I doubt there was many people that had the Orioles winning. With all that being said, if you put a gun to my head, I would swing away at this. A few weeks back, I was all in on the Yankees being the AL East champions. I thought with the Soto stuff, just Judge, just so much, that offense is going to be way, way, way better this year. And, you know, the Gerrit Cole news kind of changed my mind. Even before that news, I heard a lot of people saying, yeah, but their rotation is paper thin and they need to do something about that. Not that the rotation's bad, but if anything goes wrong, where do they turn? And that's what we're seeing now. I mean, they got some good news. We're using the word good in the way like it could have been much worse. But yeah, because of that news, I'm going to go with the Orioles. These young players, so many of these young players have had experience already in big, big games. They won tons of close games. You mentioned the Bautista thing. I like that they brought in Kimbrel. I know Kimbrel can, from time to time, just blow up. He's especially not great in the early season. But at least they addressed it. And the other thing is they have an embarrassment of riches that are still coming. All right, you talk about a Kobe Mayo, obviously a Jackson Holliday. And there's way more than that. Those might be some of the bigger names that people know. So they have more and more to add. And if there's injuries, they have kids that they can call up that are ready now. So that's why I'm going to go with them. I know the rotation, I know you kind of look at it and you're like, how the hell are they doing this? Like last year, how are these names actually, you know, putting a 100 win season together? And we'll see that maybe that is a problem this year. Obviously the Corbin Burnes stuff is nice, but I'm going to take them. I'll take them there.
And I think Grayson Rodriguez is definitely an X factor here as well with the season here. If he winds up being what we expect behind Corbin Burnes, it could be a game changer, and I'd be looking foolish for taking the pitch. But I do like this team a lot, and the core young talent is there, Rutschman and Henderson, and like you mentioned before, not even including Anthony Santander, who like is kind of understated in the grand scheme of offense. But I'm still going to sell it, holding out hope for the Yanks that the Yanks are going to win this division. But I think Baltimore Orioles are going to be very active as far as October goes. They're not putting the golf shoes and bag on quite yet when the playoffs come.
Yeah, and don't forget the Blue Jays and the Rays will have something to say about all this. 100%. And honestly, the Red Sox are getting killed in the media and by their own fans. I don't know.
There's and by Rafi Devers too. Rafi Devers
being yeah, that's cool. True. There's a small part of me that thinks they may surprise. I'm not saying they're going to compete for the division, but I think they may be at least a little better than some people think. Next one. All right. So we talked about Blake Snell earlier. All right. So take the pitcher, swing away. Now that Blake Snell has signed Jordan Montgomery and JD Martinez, some other Scott Boras players will also sign before opening day. And when I say opening day, I'm talking about March 28th next week.
It's a tight window, man. We're sitting here on the 19th and that's less than 10 days away. I'm going to take the pitch, but I do believe both of them will be signed by end of April. I think Jordan Montgomery and JD Martinez will both be on the Rangers. That's my bold prediction. I think they're both
interesting. JD Martinez on the Rangers.
Yes. I think Martinez addition could bolster the Rangers offense, which, you know, they were third in runs per game and home runs last season. And then add to a point where, you know, there's an arsenal of offense there. I think he could be someone that he may not be, like I said, with Wyatt Langford and with the other offense there, he may not be as influential as he would be on other lineups. I think he could provide depth for them that they need. And I predict that they're going to go after him as well.
And that one caught me off guard. I would not see Martin. I just don't know if there's room for him, to be honest. Not that it wouldn't be a great acquisition. I'd rather spend that money on just Montgomery and just go at it with that.
They could shift Langford to left field, though, and then also JD could be the DH, you know, so.
Yeah, for sure. Okay, so then Evan Carter, Langford, and Adolis Garcia in the outfield. That's where you're, okay. Interesting. I mean, that would be crazy. I'm begging the Mets to do it. I don't think they're going to. I think if they were, they would have done it already. I just want to see a proven hitter behind Pete Alonso just for 1 year. I don't think it's going to happen, though. All right, so moving on. Next one, we have a few more topics in this segment. Oh, God, this one could get nasty. All right, take the pitch or swing away. Domingo Germán getting signed before Trevor Bauer makes no sense.
I'm swinging away, got the green light, swing well away. Domingo Germán, what he did was horrible, and as well, I mean, there's been more athletes as well have done things similar to Trevor Bauer that were accused of similar things. I'm swinging away that if these other guys get second chances, Trevor Bauer should do the same, especially with litigation do what they've done. To have a guy being blackballed from baseball seems like a cohesive effort across the board here. You're telling me one team can't use his contributions as a pitcher here? I mean, he's going to be pitching for that Mexican League game against the Yankees, which is going to be must watch.
For sure. For sure.
Diablos Rojas is the team he's playing for. And he's wearing that team with pride because he's losing an opportunity to make everybody well aware he could still go.
Yeah. It wasn't the first Domingo Germán incident a couple years ago in front of people.
It was at a Yankees team dinner. Yep.
And this guy who people witnessed with their own eyes is under contract. And Trevor Bauer, who basically was proven that someone was trying to blackmail him. I'm not going to sit here and say Trevor Bauer is a great dude. We don't know him personally. But in this situation, unless teams know of other accusations that are out there and maybe it's not as settled as he's trying to make it out to be or that we feel like it is, it's just crazy to me. And maybe the argument shouldn't be Bauer should have been signed first. Maybe we should go with neither of them should have been signed if we want to go that route. But if with the topic the way it is, then yeah, swing away.
Yeah, I mean, with Domingo Germán, though, like, as you mentioned, it was in front of everybody, and he was brought back right after the suspension. So what are we doing?
Yeah, that's a tough one to defend, and I'm surprised we haven't really heard more about that. I guess Domingo Germán is not a fun name to talk about.
Aroldis Chapman, too, continues to have work in baseball, and we know what he's done as well. So Marcelo Ozuna, same thing.
If you haven't seen the most recent Aroldis Chapman picture, did he post it himself?
I believe it was on Instagram or his Instagram story where he's cuddling with, is that his uncle? Like who is that with him?
No, I thought it was a female that was related to him. I don't know. We're getting off the rails, but maybe there's more than one picture and I don't realize that. Fantastic. I'm sure you guys can surf the internet and figure that out. All right, so next one, swing away, take the pitch. The Padres' Dylan Cease acquisition makes them a legitimate threat to the Dodgers in the NL West? We touched upon it, but didn't necessarily go with, are they a threat or are they not? So go ahead.
I'm not only just taking the pitch, I'm stepping out of the batter's box and asking for time for the umpire, because I don't think Dylan Cease is enough to make them a threat to win a division at all. I appreciate the effort, but they're confusing me, Devin. Like, you're zigging, then zagging, and you're rebuilding, and then you're trying to be competitive. Pick a lane, San Diego.
Snip, snap, snip, snap. That's the Padres for the last couple of years. I agree with you. Okay, next one. Trevor Story's spring. If you haven't paid attention, go look at some of the notes. Look at some of the box scores. Remember, he's forgotten about. He was a star, and he's playing in Colorado, unfortunately, but he was putting up some great numbers. Some people, of course, play the Colorado card. It's only because it's Colorado, and hasn't really gotten his chance to put a full season together in Boston because of injuries. So he's back. It appears he's finally healthy. So here it is. Trevor Story's spring. Wait, hold on 1 second. Spring. All right. Oh, okay. It's going to remind people who he is this year in Boston. So he's going to make a statement, not just in spring training, but this full season.
I'm going to swing on this because I think Trevor Story is motivated to prove the Dodgers wrong, and a hitter-friendly park at Fenway Park is conducive to that swing now that he's healthy. Will it help the Boston Red Sox be competitive this year? In some games, but I think he's going to be someone to watch, especially what we've seen off the bat. It's been explosive this spring.
Yeah, and that's what I was alluding to before. If certain players show up this year for the Red Sox, I don't think the lineup's all that bad. I think the rotation is the much bigger question mark, especially with the Giolito stuff. There's some potential in the rotation. Some of those guys have great stuff. A Cutter Crawford, a Garrett Whitlock. We know they have good stuff. We have to see if they can be more than a five and fly kind of guy. And I think that's what they're aiming for. Bello as well, like, got a contract extension. He's proven he's a good pitcher. I don't know if they have an ace. Obviously, they traded Chris Sale after all the nonsense that went on there with him, and he'll probably be amazing in a Braves uniform because it's the Braves, but that's another topic. But no, if you look at the lineup, Jaron Duran could be an explosive player if he can put it together and stay healthy. Tons of speed, right? We know about Rafi Devers. If this Trevor Story that we're seeing in spring right now is really what we're going to get most of the season, then you got a guy like Tristan Casas who, you know, in a couple of years, we could be talking about him as a top three first baseman in the league if that power shows itself. Towards the end of the season last year, the last few months, he really turned it on, and we saw what he can be. You got Yoshida there as well. Like, you have some talent in the lineup. So I think it could be interesting. Again, not a threat to win the division, but maybe surprise some people and be a difficult team to play against because you're going to have to score runs. All right, so finishing up this segment, take a pitch or swing away. Ron Washington is the guy that can change the narrative for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim.
They're going to have some good times there. I'm going to take the pitch. Ron Washington seems like he's a blast to be around, but I believe this is an organizational issue that only can be solved if Art Moreno and his family sell the team to see real change. I don't think Ron Washington's enough to do that. He doesn't have the power to do so, but in the meantime, he's going to provide some great sound clips in the post games, pre games. He'd be a fun listen. And I'm happy that Ron Washington is still involved in baseball and doing his damn thing, but no, it's not going to change the narrative for the Angels.
I would have to agree, and it hurts me a little bit. I love Ron Washington. I go back. He's just such a he's a baseball lifer. You can tell he legitimately has a passion for the game, and it just doesn't seem to wear on him at all. I go back to a couple years ago. I don't know if it was the All-Star Game or the Home Run Derby, probably the All-Star Game, when he was working with Pete Alonso at first base and like trying to help him out with certain things. Washington was in a Braves uniform at that time. And I was glad Alonso accepted the help, but it was also just pretty cool to see that moment. And you could just see the guys love him. With that being said, I think you're right. Short of a monster year from Mike Trout, a full season from Mike Trout, and a breakout year from one of their pitchers, I don't think they have the chance, unfortunately. I think it was a great hire. I will say that. I just think there's other things that are going to have to change.
No, absolutely. It's definitely one of those hires that makes you, you know, it. Don't forget, he's a guy who's tabbed in to bring on some good feelings when things are not going so well. We've seen him do a lot of good stuff to right the ship when needed. So shout out to Ron Washington. But our next segment here is going to be called Just a Bit Outside, which we're going to talk about some bad takes we've heard around all the world of baseball and what we disagreed with. All All right, Devin, here we are with Just a Bit Outside, and there's a lot of commentary. You mentioned social media and X, Instagram. There's a lot of voices you could listen to. So if you're listening to us, first of all, thank you. But we heard some things this week, and we're going to start with Brandon Tierney. If you're local to New York, he does host the midday show on WFAN. He was caught saying that Juan Soto might be overrated. He even went as far as saying Kyle Tucker is one example of being a better player. He also finished it up by saying to be a true superstar, Soto has to hit 40 home runs, drive in at least 100 runs, and hit at least 300. All right, Devin. So this couldn't be more shock jock, in my opinion. This couldn't have been more just trying to meet headlines. And hey, we're talking about it. It made some headlines in the New York Post. People are talking about this because Juan Soto is a hot button conversation here, being a free agent after this year, of course, with the bright lights of Gotham on top of him. He's throwing disrespect towards a 24-year-old baseball phenomenon. This is a guy who has already established himself as one of the game's elite hitters. His age alone puts him in rarefied company with only 9 other players since 2000 winning Rookie of the Year awards at an older age. So, I mean, he's in the commentary of age 24 seasons with Ty Cobb, Mike Trout, and Mickey Mantle. And you're comparing him to Kyle Tucker, who I love, by the way. But let's not throw shade, especially in the New York market, out of Juan Soto. Brandon Tierney, do better.
It was really interesting. So a little background on how I believe this conversation started. Obviously, Yankee fans, which Brandon Tierney is a Yankee guy, I'm pretty sure,
yes,
are super excited about Juan Soto. But there's been this side conversation of, will Soto be a Yankee next year? And we know if he reaches free agency, Steve Cohen is going to bid. And I don't imagine that he won't be the highest bidder. So there's this debate of, like, you know, it seems so crazy to see a superstar potentially leave the Yankees to go for the Mets. Most people think, no way, not in this world. It'll never happen. The whole little brother thing. But it almost, the Yankee fan and Brandon Tierney almost went from celebrating Juan Soto to, when that Mets conversation started, they're almost like, well, if you bid a crazy amount of money, we don't want him anyway, because maybe he's not a superstar, because he doesn't hit 40 home runs every year. That's how the debate started. Sal Licata, the other host there, was flabbergasted by the whole thing, and I don't blame him. And he said, he's like, wait a minute, you guys celebrate him when he's a Yankee, but then as soon as there's a thought of maybe he could leave the Yankees, you immediately go to, oh, well, he's not a superstar anyway. I mean, that's like having your cake and eating it too, is exactly what was going on there. But to say a guy is not a superstar just because maybe he's not going to be a 40 home run hitter every year is insanity. Look at what this guy did with the Washington Nationals at a super young age. He led that team as the guy after Bryce Harper left. Let's not forget that. I feel like that part of the story is often left out, to step into those shoes and then lead them to a World Series against the Houston Astros, who were, I don't want to say the evil empire there, but, you know, a team that everyone's gone on to hate, and it just seems to make World Series appearance after World Series appearance. Yeah, Juan Soto is a superstar, period.
Yeah, I just don't understand the conversation. I understand you want to make good radio conversation, but there's conversation and conjecture, but then there's also foolishness. And if anyone is not seeing the greatness that is Juan Soto at the young age of, by the way, 24, we're talking about some of the core of the Baltimore Orioles, and heaping praise of saying there's some growing pains, they're going to be there, it takes time. Juan Soto has already been where he's been, and I was comparing him before. His OPS plus of 157 through his age 24 season, as I mentioned before, ranks him among Ty Cobb, Mike Trout, Mickey Mantle. His career on base right now at 421, he surpassed Hall of Famers like Ted Williams and Joe DiMaggio. Like, these are names we're throwing out there. So this dude, like, if he retired tomorrow, his season, his accomplishments would be filling a trophy case. He still has another 15 years of playing at a high level. So yes, Brandon Tierney, you're wrong. He's a superstar.
Yeah, by a lot. The other part of his point was also, well, he's not a good fielder. He's a below average fielder.
That's a fair thing. His defensive runs saved at -6, base running runs above average of -3. There's room for improvement. Understand that. Yeah. But at the same time, this is not a conversation of superstar in both ways. Like, if we want a player that's plus in defensive runs saved, you know, there's players that can't hit to do that. So he's not a liability on defense. It's not like he's out there costing you that much, you know?
Right.
All right. Well, I'm passionate about it. I'm sorry, Devin. That's just,
That's what we want here for sure. That's, Yep, that's why I included it.
All right, well, our second topic here, bad take, is Rob Manfred discussing the new uniforms. And, of course, he's been in defense of them. Of course, money does speak. But we've gotten feedback from the players, and I do have a sound clip from one Whit Merrifield talking about this and being candid among many. There's a lot of conversation about these uniforms and players being critical of them and fans being critical of it. And since Fanatics took over the new jerseys, they were touted to be softer, lighter, and stretchier, but they have faced criticism from players across the league. Most notably was the see-through pants, the mismatched colors, the numbers look small, they look like replica jerseys. And of course, Rob Manfred came out and said they got great feedback. They've been testing them out in different studies, and you know, they got positive feedback from players in the All-Star game. But right now, there's a lot of concerns about various aspects of the uniforms, and like, that's not something you really want to talk about. We had Yankees reliever Tommy Cainley talking about it, voicing his preference for the old jerseys in an interview for The Athletic, among many people. But before we get into Whit Merrifield talking about what he said, because what he says is great, your thoughts on everything they're talking about with these jerseys and how they just look bad. Like, that's the other thing. They look awful.
I mean, what a joke. Like, you're Major League Baseball. One of your teams just signed a guy to a $700 million deal. You can't get a jersey that looks respectable. Like, it's a laughing stock. We've talked so much about how Major League Baseball, how baseball itself as a sport is really more popular right now than it's ever been, and it's more exciting. Some of the rule changes ended up being 100% correct to fix some things in the game that made it, you know, a little hard for the casual people or casual fans to watch. So much good is going on right now. The youth movement, all this stuff. And spring training starts, and the biggest conversation for the first few weeks is how awful the jerseys are. You can't see the names on the back, which drives me nuts. I mean, the see-through stuff is ridiculous too, but the names on the back it's insane to me. And then we find out that the Royals somehow opted out of the new jerseys just by asking. Like, that's another strange twist. How can they not fix this and get it done? Are they going to fix, like, has there been any update to them fixing this and getting, you know, at least the names to look decent on the back and not have people exposed out there as far as, you know, the pants and seeing right through them? Like, what? They have to do it. This can't be it. Manfred saying no, that people actually like it. Like, there's gaslighting, and then there's this. This is a whole different level of it.
Absolutely. Let's hear what Whit Merrifield had to say about this, because his quotes are really awesome.
You think you're getting to the big leagues, and when you get to the big leagues, a lot of things happen for you. Like, you get paid well. Basically, you get a custom wardrobe. And so you get to come in, get your pants exactly how you want them, your jersey exactly how you want it. That was always like a great perk of being a big leaguer. Well, this year we show up, and they basically say, like, tell us your size, and then you got, like, three stock options you get to choose from. Like, a little bit looser, medium loose, or tight. That rubbed people the wrong way initially. People were upset about that they weren't going to be able to, like, customize their pants exactly like they wanted to, and then they wouldn't be able to, like, change as the year went on. That wasn't a good start for whoever it was that brought these uniforms on. I don't know what the update is. I think the Player Association has gotten involved. The jerseys are like that Nike, like, dry fit type stuff. Honestly, when it's hot, it'll probably be good. It just feels like a cheaper material. It feels like something that you buy off the rack at Dick's. It doesn't feel like big league. Maybe it's just us being a little bit prideful about the way we look. But you look good, you play good. It's always been.
So you heard it from the man himself. That's one of many quotes that we've heard about these jerseys. And the fact that's even a conversation is a bad thing. These teams should be getting ready for the season, gearing up to think about their play. But if you're thinking about the uniforms, it already is a failed endeavor. And the baseball jersey has always been this prideful thing, and their uniforms have always been laden in history. So we'll see. I mean, now the Players Association is getting involved, that this is a sticking point. These jerseys may only last this year, but we're going to have to last through 162 games of people complaining about them.
That's insane that they have to last 162 games. I'll just say that. He hit it on the head. I had that thought when he talks about Dick's Sporting Goods. Like, I thought, I'm like, this looks like me as a little kid, like, in the fitting room, like, trying out a pair of baseball pants, like the cheapest ones on the rack, and being like, oh, I can kind of see the jock strap right through it. Like, that's not what we want in Major League Baseball. So, I mean, if we're really dealing with this for 162 games, it's insane to me that we can't pivot somehow.
All right, that being said, we're going to get to our next segment here called A Minor Issue. We're going to talk about some of the stuff happening down on the farm. All right, so in this segment, we're going to be providing you guys a quick note on an exciting prospect, something to look forward to. And the question that we posed here is, when will we see Paul Skeens? So, of course, we know the Pittsburgh Pirates' top prospect and last year's number one overall draft pick. They announced earlier this week, Devin, that he will not break camp with the big league club, but he'll continue training with the major league squad instead of returning to the minors. This is disappointing to Pirates fans because they believe he's ready as an exceptional talent. I pass it to you. When will we see Paul Skeens on the mound at PNC Park?
Oh, it's tough. I think the fans are going to demand it. I don't know how much that'll affect the Pittsburgh front office. I'm not going to say September. All right, that'd be an easy answer. Like, oh, we're just going to see him for a cup of coffee in September. But I also don't think it's April. I don't think it's May. If you really had to ask me for an honest answer, my guess would be sometime in August. That would be my answer.
Yeah, I'm going to go with June just because of the pressure, I think. I mean, we saw that the impressive stuff showcasing his abilities during spring training. So it's not like he needs any growth here. And really, training with the major league squad instead of returning to the minors is a big caveat. So what, is he going to just do that for a few months? Really, I mean, the core of this, if we're all just breaking it down and being honest, it's allowing the Pirates to maintain control over Skeens' contract and manage his workload. Those are two things that we know have raised a lot of eyebrows. We know the Seattle Mariners have been criticized for what they were doing there. They're trying to preserve a year of control. Here we are. This is the world we live in, Devin. Paul Skeens is not going to be playing with the big league club until they're ready. They're going to monitor his progress and development, but they're going to wait to promote him to the major leagues. And I think it's a bad idea because we mentioned this guy is ready to be competing on the main level. And I guarantee you there's no other starter on that Pittsburgh roster that's better than Paul Skeens and ready to take the opening day ball. But I think we need to move away from this, waiting for this to happen. Like that, it frustrates me because we watch teams be competitive from the jump. And now Paul Skeens is going to be sitting in the minors kind of waiting his turn.
Well, to be fair, it's changed a bit. In the new CBA, there are some things that encourage teams to get their guys that should be up. It's not as bad as, say, the back in the Chris Bryant days. Remember where he was just absolutely demolishing AAA pitching for a while. And they just, the Cubs just kept on pushing him down, pushing him down, pushing him down. We're not there. We are in a little better situation. I think if the Pirates thought their team was ready to compete right now, I think he would break camp. But I think they know, even though they have some really exciting players coming up, and if you look at the lineup, you're like, oh, it's actually kind of a fun lineup. And some guys are having really good springs, whether it be O'Neill Cruz and Kid Brian Hayes and on and on. You got other guys coming that are super young still, like Tamar Johnson, who could be a great second baseman, that combination with O'Neill Cruz. So there's a lot to be excited about, but I think that's where they're going. Like, all right, just do it in, I'm guessing, is he starting in AAA? He's starting in AAA, right?
I'm assuming, but right now he's with the major league squad and not returning to the minors. I guess that'll be distinguished next week. They'd have to make a decision on where he is. He can't live in this weird purgatory roster spot, right?
I wouldn't think so. I mean, I think you and I have talked about this where he reminds us the closest thing to Steven Strasburg, right? That's my thought when I see him. Well, even when I saw him at LSU throwing in the College World Series, how hard he throws, how dominant he is, electric. People go crazy for him. So if you look at Strasburg, he was drafted number one overall by the Washington Nationals back in 2009, which is crazy that it was that long ago.
Weren't you at the start for Strasburg, his first start in Pittsburgh?
Not his first start. It's funny. I'm looking at his rookie game log right now. And I see the game we went to. We went 4th of July weekend. A bunch of us went DC, which was super fun to see him pitch against the Mets. And we actually were winning that game until the 9th inning when Familia blew up and gave the Nationals the game. But that's a side note. So he was drafted in 2009. He ended up making his debut on June 8th, 2010 against the Pittsburgh Pirates, interestingly enough. He went 7 innings, gave up 2 runs on 4 hits and struck out. How many guys do you think he struck out?
If I remember watching the game, 14.
Well done, 14. 14 strikeouts in his debut about a year after he was drafted. Pretty cool. That Mets game, by the way, That 4th of July weekend, let's see what he did that time. He went five, gave up two runs on four hits, struck out only five guys. So the Mets had a nice little day there. I could see Paul Skenes having a very similar debut to go back to that 14 strikeout game. Must see TV. Maybe Livy Dunn will be in the audience in the park, which some people will tune in just for that alone. I think he's going to be electric when it comes up. When that baseball hits the mitt, it's a different sound.
So I think I agree with you completely. I think it's going to kind of go down that path, and we have to wait for the transition to get to a point where the best players are just on the field, because there is the control thing. We mentioned the negotiating tactics on both sides is to keep the control, and it's smart for the Pirates because you don't want to give up the year of control, especially in a year that you're probably not winning the World Series. Paul Skenes is more valuable to the franchise for having an extra year of control without having to negotiate, because let's be honest, we've seen the track record. They're probably not going to be able to afford him if he's as good as advertised. So they want to maximize having him on the roster. That being said, I hate when it's spun that they're doing this to ensure he's prepared. The rigors of a primary, you know, his first major league season. That's, to me, overstated. This dude has proven every level he's played that he's good. And I think we're watching teams players get handled with kid gloves. And I think ultimately it damages them. I think it becomes a mental game where you're not able to pitch your fruition because the team is always putting these restraints on you. So I would like to see, just for once, and I understand there's a lot of investment in these players with a lot of money on the line, I would like to see them just go until they can go. And in my opinion, you could do the math on it. I think the correlation between a lot of these elbow surgeries has to do with when more restrictions are placed on players, because we're watching down the line, these guys are going balls to the wall to get to the level they are. And then you get to, you know, you can't go more than six. You have to go five and a third. And even though you've only thrown 60 pitches, Paul Skenes is a bulldog. Let him go.
Yeah. I mean, you said handled with kid gloves, especially the pitchers, like, and even pitchers that are up in the majors, like, we're seeing some managers are little by little letting their guys go a little longer and deeper past 100 pitches. We saw some complete games last year. We did. I'm hoping it's trending in that direction. Let these guys go. Let these guys go out there and throw and change the mentality, because now these guys are being brought up with this mentality where then they get in their heads too. We heard, you're going to have to remind me who it was, because I don't want to say the wrong guy, because this is not a good thing. But I want to say maybe George Kirby. Do you remember when he got upset last year
that they left him in the game?
Yep. Like past, like, I don't even think it was past 100. I want to say maybe past like 80. And I mean, his biggest mistake was saying those words out loud to the media. Like, just keep, if you feel that way, fine, but don't say that out loud. But yeah, I'd love to see a little bit of a mentality change, even though I get it.
It's going to take time.
We'll see him this year, though. I think we'll see. If we don't see him this year, it's criminal, unless he's absolutely getting blown up in AAA, which I don't expect to happen.
Yeah, I think June is where we're going to expect to see him, but he should be on the opening day roster, especially with what we've seen from him. It's exciting and make people tune in. You want to talk about ratings and fill in the ballpark? He does just that. But let's get to our final segment here called Coming Around Third. We're going to wrap up, preview next week, and give our final thoughts on our hometown teams. All right, you can find us here next week talking on episode 2 of Table Setters, breaking down all the action in South Korea, but also previewing opening day proper. So we're going to finish up discussing our hometown teams, and I'll let you start with the Steve Cohen quotes to pick apart some of the stuff he said here. Like it or not, just kind of give me your thoughts as a Met fan.
Okay, so most of it I liked. I'm going to give you a couple quotes just in case anyone's listening didn't really hear it. I think he's pretty forthright with the strategy and what they're looking at, he and David Stearns, over these next few years. He's excited about what they have coming. He used the word stacked, which I thought was interesting to hear a billionaire owner use that term. He said, I feel like for the first time, we're kind of stacked. And I think he was talking about the guys that they have in the system now, not just necessarily the major league players. It's very clear they have a bunch of guys on the team with 1 year left on their deal. That next year is a transition year. I'm not saying none of these guys will be back. I think some of them will, depending on how things go with their individual season. But I think he's excited to see what these kids can do, and also adding with their money. They are now, I'm getting excited, even though this year might not be great. I'm not saying it'll be terrible, but I think they're kind of sacrificing this year a little bit for the greater good. And I think they're finally in the situation that is similar to the Dodgers eventually, where they can have this three-tier system of tons of money to get the guys they want and to outbid people. A good system where they can bring these kids up eventually and they can help in a lot of different ways, whether it be a Jett Williams who gets on base, has a great eye, steals bases, or eventually who am I thinking? Oh, Ryan Clifford, who can hit the ball out of the ballpark. We know Drew Gilbert is a guy who kind of plays with his hair on fire. That's the term they use a lot with him. So there's guys coming, and there's a lot of sneaky pitching with this whole new pitching lab that the Mets have that people are starting to rave about as paying dividends very, very quickly. The one thing I didn't like, I have to say one thing. I wish you would have left this out. They basically asked him about his original timeline and his first ever press conference after buying the team. They asked him, like, what is your timeline? What do you hope for? Like, when do you think, you can win a World Series? And he said, I want to win a World Series within 3 to 5 years. Like, that's my expectation. Now, that window's coming to a close very soon. So they asked him about that. And he said, basically, has your timeline changed? He said, I would hope that we would have had more winning seasons, but it's not easy. And then he said, in the end, and this is the part I hate, I was given what I was given. He could have left that part out. I don't like, because that's just throwing a little excuse in there. And I understand the Wilpons did not spend money just not just on players, but also the behind the scenes stuff, like the pitching lab and things like that. So Steve Cohen, not only has he spent money on players and some have worked out, some have not, but he's also turning the Mets into a state-of-the-art franchise from top to bottom. And I think you see that from the giant scoreboard to some of the luxury areas that are like twice the size now to all of this stuff. And now behind the scenes player development. It's exciting. And I hope this turns the Mets into a franchise that people want to come play for the long term and just viewing the Mets as that kind of franchise. So this year, I really don't know what to expect. I think there's a chance they overachieve. I think it's going to be tough to kind of run with the Phillies and the Braves, but excited for the long-term view at this point.
So as a supplementary piece to what all those quotes are here, David Stearns did a Q&A that dropped on The Athletic today talking about his first season in Queens and his fandom of the Mets. I thought it really was a great eye-opening experience to read, especially with his fandom piece. And I think a lot of times they'll say that and, you're passionate about the team, but it felt genuine from David Stearns. He feels like he loves this franchise and has his best interest in mind, not just for the professional of, yeah, it's his resume on the line, but no, I think he values the legacy and the historical nature of the franchise that is the New York Mets. So his Q&A was great. And The Athletic, man, so worth the money, by the way, if you guys are into finding all your sports news and the way The Athletic works on that app, dude, I can't say it enough. It's well worth the annual fee every single year.
Yeah, they do a great job. And just one little quick thing on Stearns before we move to your Yankees. He's just got to get through this year to next offseason. And the next offseason, he's got to deliver. It's been a very easy, kind of low-hanging fruit for so many Mets fans, annoyed Mets fans to call, sports talk radio and basically say, this Stearns guy, who does he think he is? We already hate him. He's doing things for the Mets as if he's still the general manager of the Milwaukee Brewers. And I get it. Sometimes when you see the signings he's making, it does feel that way a little bit. But I think it's all part of the plan. I do now, after listening to both of them, feel like they really do have this plan, and that this year there's a reason they brought in some kind of lower level signings on short contracts. Because what they told Max Scherzer last year to kind of get him out of here actually had a little more truth to it than I thought at the time when he said, I was basically told we're not expecting to be in the thick of things next year. We are looking towards 2025. I think that's true.
Yeah, that's a tough pill to swallow for fans, but time does fly by. And as long as you can see the growth you want to see in the younger players here in the Mets, I think it's going to be a successful season. And you mentioned overachieving. That's what you want to see. You want to see the young core come together and really emphasize adding with free agency so you have something to look forward to next year. And you don't want to close the book on this year because, as you could see, anything can happen, but you have to look at it through a realistic lens. And I think everyone's doing that. And the smart Met fans are going to be the smart Met fans, but there's going to be people. And they're going to yell and scream into the ether about what they're, and they'd be unhappy anyway. I mean, it's just New York, and that's what sports radio is, you know. So
there's a lot of Met fans out there that just want to be unhappy, whether they admit that or not. It's like they've almost been trained to be. And I don't know, this season, it's almost like a nice change of going into it with low expectations, and maybe we can be surprised instead of the opposite, which is something that happened last year. So we'll see. I mean, they've looked good in spring training. Again, I don't know how much you take from that. The pitching, the ERA has been really good as a team. I do think the bullpen's pretty good, I'll say that. So, you know, Edwin Diaz back, which is exciting. I hope they end up being a little better than that kind of, 79 wins that I heard you guys talking about earlier in the fantasy chat. We'll see, though. It's hard to predict a full baseball season.
Absolutely. Moving on to the Yankees here, we got some bad news about DJ LeMahieu, and Greg Joyce of the New York Post were providing an update on his injury. He sustained a significant bone bruise on his right foot after fouling a ball, sidelining him for opening day, just over, you know, being days away at this point, probably over a week away. Despite Boone's initial excitement about LeMahieu's improved health at the start of camp, this has raised concerns about his availability. So it raises the question here really about exploring options in the infield, because if he can't play third, right now all the Yankees have is Oswaldo Cabrera, they have Jahmy Jones and Jorbert Vivas as depth infielders. And as we can kind of tell by their names here, outside of Oswaldo Cabrera, the rest of them, as far as major league experience, is pretty damn limited. So we also have the non-roster invitees that are there, Joss Van Meter, Jeter Thounds, and Kevin Smith. But for a team that's looking with World Series aspirations, you have to kind of have a little bit of a better option. I mean, kicking yourself, especially with Kike and Amed Rosario previously linked to the Yankees and they signed elsewhere, I mean, that would really help here. But how could you predict the future here with the bone bruise? But we're going to be looking at some of the other veteran infielders. Josh Harrison, he just recently opted out of his minor league deal. And you can also go down the list with some other guys. Donovan Solano, Evan Longoria. None of the options are good, you know. So there's immediate concerns with really just the broader health of the Yankees here. And I think Aaron Boone has done a good job of navigating these things in the media and talking about it and trying to keep everyone with the level head. Because when you hear ace and really the lion's share of the burden of keeping the team afloat, Gerrit Cole, is set to miss significant time due to an elbow injury, the team right now is looking to get some good news. And as much as DJ LeMahieu was on a down season, like he's coming off of a lot of down season where he's not as heralded as he was, he's certainly not the key contributor on offense, they're still relying on him. So this kind of pokes a hole in the depth for the Yankees and just makes the bruise that is the injuries that you have with Judge and Cole feel a little bit worse, because it's like, is this the type of season 2024 is going to be? Seems like it's kind of snake bitten from the jump, but hopefully maybe one of those guys that I named right there will become a cult hero that comes up and they just wind up like they put the Yankee jersey on, they turn into a superhero.
Yeah, that does happen sometimes. But here's the thing, like, I don't think one of those guys needs to replace DJ LeMahieu necessarily. I think you're talking about the leadoff spot. I'm hoping Anthony Volpe will replace him there. Is that the plan? Is that seem to be what they're going to do?
Yeah, the other thing that complicates this is Oswald Peraza, who was supposed to be, okay, he's our utility guy. He also suffered a shoulder strain. So now he's out 6 to 8 weeks. So everything's kind of colliding into one where they're forced to make a decision where the opening day third baseman may wind up be someone that you even project to have on your 40 man.
Right. But I mean, I would hope they give Volpe that chance. There were times where he was really successful as a leadoff hitter last year when they gave him the shot. I mean, come on, like, you put him in front of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge, kid's going to see pitches. Mm-hmm. Like, they're not trying to put anybody on base with those two guys coming up. Like, if you want to see this guy flourish, that could be a positive that comes out of that negative of leaving or losing DJ LeMahieu. So give Anthony Volpe the chance. And listen, if a month and a half, 2 months go by and LeMahieu for some reason still isn't back and Volpe's hitting 210 like he did at times last year, all right, well, you got to make an adjustment there. But I would not be shocked to see him put there and then flourish. So I haven't looked into that yet. I know the LeMahieu stuff is fairly fresh, and Aaron Boone sometimes gives us non-answers. But I would hope to see Volpe there.
I mean, I'm looking at it, I think in all best case scenario would have been DJ or even a guy like Glaber leading off there. So, but you know, as long as you have the back to back of Judge and Soto somewhere down the line this season, I think they'll be okay. But the injury stuff is, it's going to happen. And conversations on this show are going to definitely veer around injuries. And Hopefully we're not talking about significant ones to our teams or the biggest stars in baseball, but unfortunately that's par for the course when you're talking about what is a marathon? It's not a sprint, it's a marathon. So that's going to wrap us up here talking about all the news. And I think we're going to end our show every week talking about our hometown teams and kind of giving our thoughts, maybe a little rant segment, good or bad in that direction. Devin, this was a good first show. I mean, it was nice to get out here and do this. And like we said, episode two, we're going to have a lot more to break down all the action in Korea. We're going to have the results of the two games in South Korea between the Padres and the Dodgers. And we're going to have a slate of opening day games to break down. We have some of the list of the starters. We're going to give maybe some bold predictions. As I mentioned, we're going to be talking about some milestones coming up for some veteran players as they approach some big names here. Hits, home runs, RBI, stolen bases, wins above replacement. There's a lot of good stuff happening here to keep you guys afloat. But any final words, Devin, before we kind of sign off for this first episode here?
No, man, this was awesome. So glad to get started. Can't wait till next week. Like you said, full slate of games, lots to talk about. And it's going to go on and on and on. The whole season, we'll have plenty to talk about. And as you can see through here, we will talk about our hometown teams, but we plan on talking about as many different regions and teams and divisions and players as we possibly can, because although we are passionate Mets and Yankees fans, Steve and I just love the game of baseball. We love following it, love following the younger players and seeing how some of the older guys kind of can wrap up their careers. So if you're looking for a little bit of a conversation of a little bit of everything, and we didn't bring fantasy into it much today. I think we will as the fantasy stuff gets started. So you can have that to look forward to as well. So very excited. Can't wait to do it again.
So if you want to support the show and you like what we're doing here, follow us on Instagram at Table Setters Pod. Also on the X Machine at Table Setters Pod. Interact with us. Send us a message. Tell us what you like about the show. If you disagree with something or just simply want us to discuss something with a topic, we're more than happy to contribute any of your thoughts onto the show. Devin, again, this has been a blast. And we'll be back next week talking all things MLB with a whole new set of new things to talk about. But until next time, guys, we'll talk to you after a while.
High fly ball into right field. She is gone. In a year that has been so improbable, the impossible has happened. This one by Mattingly. Oh!